Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined, as always, by Nick Pollock for take two of our look at his 2026 early starting pitcher rankings.
What is happening? Yes, we did this a couple weeks ago, or like 2 weeks ago, and we put it out on YouTube, but we didn't actually publish it. And honestly, I'm glad we didn't because I've already made changes to it. The article is actually coming out on Tuesday. So we're just going to go through the top 100 now, and we're going to breeze through it a bit. We're not going to really belabor too much on this guy versus that guy or so. Eric has seen my previous ones. He's the guys that I've changed a little bit on, and he's going to point out some of them. I'll certainly express some weird things that I encountered while doing this. But yeah, welcome to the Waits.
Welcome back. If you were here, we had some technical difficulties in the last one too, so some players were missing. So this is good. And also, we should say we had a Roto World staff mock draft. We are in the middle of a pitcher list mock draft. So we have done mock drafts, and for me personally, doing one and making and realizing like, oh, I wouldn't pick that tier of pitchers over this tier, like that caused me to shift some of these rankings as well. So I'm happy to dig in here. And we should start with the first tier. It's just three guys.
Yeah.
It's Garrett Crochet, Paul Skeens, Tarek Skubal. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
Let's just go with the three amigos. I don't care. It's three guys who you can put them in any order you want. I'm putting Crochet first because of his higher win chance. And then Skeens is ahead of Skubal because it's a higher ratio chance, and then you have Skubal, who's the middle of both, so it's just whatever you want, guys. Put them in order.
Yeah, exactly. You have Crochet number one. I think a lot of people won't, but I think this will be pretty much the consensus top three. And I
100%.
Where you go from there, it's your own personal preference.
Now it gets hard already.
I probably won't end up with any of these guys because I'm just not going to take starting pitchers that early in the draft.
Right.
The second tier starts number four, Brian Woo. Number five, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number six, Max Fried. Number seven, Cole Reagans. Number eight, Logan Gilbert. Number nine, Hunter Green. Number 10, George Kirby. Number 11, Christopher Sanchez. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
So this is your warm blanket. These are the guys that you feel you draft them. You're not going to think about the entire way of the year. They either have absurd upside of like 30% plus strikeout rates with good ratios and volume, or they are elite volume with elite ratios and strikeouts and wins along the way. So it's a little bit of a mix of that. You have like Hunter Green in here, for example, and Cole Reagans with your Max Fried and Yamamoto and Wu. And the reason Wu is first here, guys, I know it's going to be wild. All the injury stuff, we're kind of in the dark about all of it. And at this moment, I'm considering him all good to go for next year. I see Brian Wu as Zach Wheeler 2.0. And that means that Zach Wheeler, you'd have right below that first tier. That's why I have Brian Wu there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in. I moved after our talk the last time, I moved him to six behind Yamamoto and Fried. My ranking for him prior to had been lower because of that concern. But then again, as you mentioned, we had the concern this year and he pitched the whole year. He is back to pitching now in the postseason. I understand not in the traditional role, but yeah, I mean, I love the upside here. I don't have George Kirby in this tier. Maybe I should. Maybe I should have Hunter Green in this tier. Hunter Green has never been an ace, really, like over the course of a full season. That's not like talent wise. I just mean, Hunter Green has never like finished as a top 10 starting pitcher and you're like, this guy is an ace. But maybe that's foolish to penalize him for that, even though we know he technically is by, you know, ability.
It's so hard because, right, Hunter Green, what he does is actually, there's no one else really like him outside of that top three, right? The way that his four-seamer and slider were just so absurdly good this year. Mm-hmm. Throwing a ton of strikes with the slider all of a sudden, the four-seamer getting more life at the top of the zone, missing more bats with more vert. It just, you know, when it comes to quality per inning, Hunter Green beats most of the guys in this tier. And it didn't feel right to keep him out of this tier just because of the, you know, he pitched 150 innings this year, but it wasn't an arm injury. And yeah. Injuries are weird. It's not a given that he's going to get hurt in this next year. I felt that dinging him and not anyone else didn't feel right. He's not your Chris Sale, Jacob DeGrom, Tyler Glasnow types when it comes to injury, in my opinion.
Right.
So I didn't feel right putting him with those guys.
Yeah, there's always the general risk of like, hey, he's a high velocity guy, and the high velocity guys tend to carry more risk. But, you know, we've had enough years of him in the big leagues where we haven't seen these consistent arm injuries. And so maybe it won't impact him. And to your point, the improvements in the command and control of the other pitches has been great. This next year starts at number 12, Shohei Ohtani, number 13, Chris Sale, number 14, Jacob DeGrom, number 15, Tyler Glasnow, number 16, Hunter Brown, number 17, Joe Ryan, number 18, Chris Bradish, and number 19, Shane Bieber.
Kyle Bradish.
Number 19, Shane Bieber. What's this tier called, and why is it called that?
This is called Van Leeuwen's. If you don't know Van Leeuwen's, it's an incredible ice cream place in a couple of them now here in New York.
Yeah. And it's overly trendy, and people wait for lines unnecessarily around the corner, and you could get ice cream somewhere else.
It's incredible. And the thing about it is, I mean, I don't have to wait in line at all. Because I'm Nick Pollock. No, because they don't actually line up where I go. But it's something that is incredibly good, but you can't have too much of it. And also, it's always something you'll enjoy. So this tier is actually kind of split in two. You have the Ohtani, Sale, DeGrom, Glasnow side, who are the fewer innings, but should be high quality, versus the quality volume of Brown, Ryan, Bradish, Bieber that doesn't quite match, in my view, the ceiling of Sanchez and Kirby and Gilbert and Fried, etc. So those, it's really tough. I probably would have another tier for that, but I didn't want to get too tier heavy here. And I'm sure the biggest ones for you would be Bradish and Bieber here. Maybe I'm too low on Brown, but if anyone's followed me, you guys know that I am not the biggest Hunter Brown believer based on his lack of secondaries that he can rely on constantly, and his success being a product of his increased velocity that didn't hold throughout the entire year. But Bradish and Bieber, yeah, you had a lot of pushback, I believe, when I was drafting them both in our mock draft.
Yeah, and we should say, we'll get to this guy later, but there was an arm in this tier, which is Carlos Rodon. And I guess the news most recently about him having this arm surgery bone spur in the elbow has knocked him out of here for you. I assume that's the reason he's not here.
Well, he's not going to start the season in the rotation. He's going to be on the IL, and everyone who's injured goes into their lovely injury tier. There are two of them. So you're going to see him in the injury one tier later on.
Yep. Tier number two. Starts at number 20, Jacob Mizrowski, number 21, Blake Snell, number 22, Shota Imanaga, number 23, Freddy Peralta, number 24, Nick Pavetta, number 25, Yuri Perez. What's this tier called, and why is it called that?
This is like the, I'm going to call it the Pringles commercial, because when I was a kid, Eric, I remember seeing a Pringles ad for their pizza flavor. And my gosh, all I wanted was a pizza flavored Pringle at that time. And it really stuck with me because my dad said to me, "They got you, Nick." And it's like, all right, yeah, but I still want it.
Right.
And that's really it. It feels like this is the tier of, I know that I'm going to want them in drafts, but my brain says, hey, look, these have higher bust value than the others. So I need to push them down further. And I would imagine that the Jacob Mizrowski at 20, that ranking is the one that is going to be most contentious.
I don't know. I'm seeing him a lot of places similar. I had him a little bit lower. I now have him 21 if we're moving Rodon out, which I had yet to do on these rankings. And so, I fully get that. I'm okay with it. I have him. Yeah. I have him behind.
Cool. Looking at what's
different from you. I have Blake Snell ahead of him, but like,
Well, yeah, I mean, with Blake Snell, though, I can't do it. It's just how many times is he going to do the same thing for us to believe, no, it's going to be different, right? What he does is he, for whatever reason, does not give you what you want for 3 months, and then he does. And as a fantasy manager, I don't want that.
Why does he give you what you want?
I don't want to deal with that. At this point, I want someone for the entire season, right? And look, if you're in a head-to-head league, I get it. You might actually want to go for Snell just because then you have him in September when it could matter most. But it's just such a headache.
Yeah.
And if I'm getting a starter at this point, I don't want a headache. And just to bring it back a little bit to Kyle Brash and Shane Bieber, I see them as not headaches for the year. One lesson that, you know, Saris and I talked about in the craft was really focusing on players who returned from injury, had success, instead of those who have not showcased any return at all from injury, right? So your DeGrom, for example, had 3 starts and then he was successful.
Yes.
We had Scooble do that before in the past. We saw, we actually even saw Bradish do it before. Yeah. In the past. So this is a case where we saw Bradish and we saw Bieber have success. They look good. I mean, watching them, it's like, yeah, you guys are the thing. I don't see why either of them won't go, just go every 5 days and pretty much be off of a leash completely for the entire year. Getting that kind of solid volume is really, really important.
Can I ask you about Shota Imanaga? Because sure. I have him a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. The ERA concerns came home to roost a little bit this year. There was also the injury mixed in. And so, you know, we don't want to over inflate the, like, the poor rates. I mean, it was a 3.73 ERA. The whip was fine, but a 3.73 ERA hurts you a little bit. There are home run issues in Wrigley. I'm just curious why you have him here and not, again, this is very marginal, but not kind of like closer to headache guys like a Dylan Cease or a Jesus Lizardo, where you're like, hey, there's lots of strikeout potential. Hey, there are some ratio concerns.
Sure. So if you remove his last start of the year, which was 8 earned runs, right? Imanaga has a 3.37 ERA. I mean, all right, it's a sub-1 whip regardless.
Right.
And a 20-21% strikeout rate. And that really is the thing. It's like, hold on a second. That strikeout rate is the one that should concern you a little bit. However, his put-away rate on his four-seamer was 11% this year. And if you guys know me, I'm very much a big believer in put-away rates mm-hmm. as a showcase of strikeout rate. That is, if you don't have a good put-away rate, which is how successful are you with this pitch in a 2-strike count to get a strikeout, then you're not going to get strikeouts. On the flip right. side of that, if you are so good at it, if you are at an unsustainable level, you are going to drop in strikeouts because you cannot be that efficient in 2-strike counts for a full season again. So 11% is horrific. We're talking 17% last year for Imanaga, which is actually a little bit low relatively to the field. So this was 7th percentile in the majors for Imanaga's four-seamer. And last year at 18%, it was 55th percentile, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the quick redemption for his strikeouts of saying, okay, fine. I'm not going to say you're going to be at 25% to 30%, but we saw 25% in 2024. I think it's very easy for Imanaga to be 22, 23. Yes, home runs are the bigger concern. 1.93 homer per 9. And yet, if you have a guy with a sub-1 whip, I will always buy into that because the noisiest thing year to year are home runs.
Right.
And I'm not going to say that he's going to be a sub-1 home run per 9 guy. But if Imanaga is a 1.5 like he was in 2024, that returned a 2.91 ERA. And I don't really think he's that much different from that rookie year. So Imanaga to me is a very safe, stable arm. And I actually was even thinking, should I have him in the higher tier as opposed to the lower one? Because, yeah, he does look like a volume guy who you're not going to drop the entire year and should really help in some key areas.
all totally valid. I have him 29. You have him 22. It's not crazy. I just have him below some of those, the safer arms. But again, we'll see as we get closer how that changes. You have Cherry Bomb tier next. It's number 26, Ryan Pepiot. Number 27, Cam Schlittler. Number 28, Drew Rasmussen. 29, Michael King. 30, Brandon Woodruff. 31, Chase Dylan Cease. And 32, Chase Burns. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Oh boy, here we go again. This is where I always screw up every year in rankings. I think this is the hardest thing about it, is this point where no one would really be upset that I put Mizrowski at 20 or that I put Freddy Peralta at 23, even Eury Pérez, because we all know that Eury Pérez, he has one of the better fastballs out there. And you have to think that just naturally for his age and development, that the secondaries will get better and he should just be a really solid arm with a great strikeout rate, right? Now you get to this point where you're mixing in the former volume studs who have proven over the years as a overpayment in drafts of your Logan Webb and Valdez and that kind of kin. And then how do I pair that with someone like Dylan Cease, who we all know is not going to have as terrible of a season as you just have.
Right.
I mean, fine. It's going to be like a 90% chance that he doesn't have as bad of a season. Right. So it's such a struggle. Like, I really like what Cam Schlittler does. I think that he is a rock in this. I don't actually think he's like a 28-30% strikeout rate guy, but pitching for the Yankees, so he should get a lot of wins. They let him go longer into games. They trust him a lot. He has a good foundation as a four seamer. He fell in with his cutter and his curveball really well. Like, this is a guy I feel like is just a workhorse. Ryan Pepiot is going into Tropicana Field, and say whatever you want about this year with Pepiot. Him in Tropicana is going to be awesome. I can't express that enough. He is a better version of himself than he was in 2024. And I'm so excited about that. Same with Drew Rasmussen, who's now going to have a longer leash. I don't know what to make of Michael King and Brandon Woodruff, because King had like a lost season and Woodruff was overperforming with his fastballs. And then there's Chase Burns, who is two pitch, four seamer slider. And we didn't get enough of a sample for me to feel comfortable throughout a whole year and to say that, okay, cool, he's passed all the adversity and he won't have those major stumbles. So, I love these guys and I hate these guys at the same time, Eric.
Yeah, I get that. The Pepiot thing, I'm still trying to figure that out. I mean, I have him right now at 32, so slightly lower than you. I'm trying to figure out the park aspect of this. I have Michael King much higher than you. I have Michael King 17th, kind of Bradish and Bieber. Because I was just like, listen, I thought this guy was an ace coming into the year. He pitched really well when he was healthy. I still think there's the potential for him to be a really, really good starting pitcher. There are some concerns about innings or, you know, health or durability or whatever you want to say. But it's like, I think of him being, I'm a little more confident in what I'm going to get from him when he's on the mound than I am from guys like Pepiot or like Dylan Cease or like Cam Schlittler in his second year, that like I would put King in another, in the tier above.
So this is something I'm trying to do more and more, and maybe it's silly to do it, is when I look at Bieber, Bradish, and King, I see two guys who were having lots of success and were just auto starts down the stretch. And another who we're just like, is he okay? Is it fine? Is it not? Right?
Yeah.
And that's Michael King, the latter one. So I will just always be safer. I will always just play the game of, yeah, he's more of the same is what we need, as opposed to he's going to return to form. And I should mention with Michael King, his greatest asset was command. And when you see a command guy not be a command guy, it's harder for me to say, well, no, that's going to change immediately.
Right.
So it's just, I'm completely in agreement with you. I was so in on Michael King. and I can't quite go for it in the same aggressive way because of that.
Let me ask you why Brandon Woodruff is in this tier and not the injured tier.
Is he injured again?
I mean, he ended the year like.
I thought it was understanding with Brandon Woodruff, like there's a difference in the injury tier of you were injured and there's no real sign of you coming back, while Woodruff was just like, hey, are you going to be back for the playoffs at all or not? And there's a lot more questions of it. Could be very wrong. I will look more into it and see if
I'm going to be down to the injury tier. He had a lat strain. He was not going to be ready for the postseason.
Okay.
But he also had off-season shoulder surgery the year before and then has the lat strain. And so it's just like, and the injuries are piling up a little bit. And so, sure, I guess maybe I look at it as he ended the year hurt. Mm. And so there are a lot of guys who ended the year hurt where, like, for example, I know you are a believer that Pablo Lopez is totally fine and wasn't really that injured and he could have continued to pitch, but he's in the injury stash tier,
right,
but Woodruff isn't. And I kind of view them in the same boat. Like,
I totally understand that one. I think actually what you're saying means that I will be pushing Woodruff down. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
But again,
for consistency's sake for myself, right, that makes all the sense.
Yeah. I have no concerns about Woodruff. Just something to consider there is that there's a $20 million mutual option with a $10 million buyout. And so this is a Brewers team that's talking about trading Freddie Peralta. So are they going to pick up a $20 million option on Brandon Woodruff too with the injury concerns? And so Woodruff's an intriguing name in the offseason because is he going to be healthy and where is he going to pitch? Is it Milwaukee? Is it somewhere else? There are some contenders looking for arms and the Brewers park is, if he gets out of it, could be a little interesting. So we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to move on to some exciting upside arms, but we're going to do that after this break. So in the next tier, there's a little bit of some guys who are, kind of safe and boring, but there are some young pitchers in here that I think will entice some people. This tier starts with number 32, Robbie Ray; number 33, Logan Webb; number 34, Framber Valdez; number 35, Nick Lodolo; number 36, Bubba Chandler; and number 37, Jesus Luzardo. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like I want to give the same name to all of these. But no, this one is the two beakers to me because everyone wants to say that, this is where you're going to get volume and it's different than the other places. But these are the two beakers that are the same actual volume, but they're different shapes. So you can't actually see. It feels like it's the same or different, right? But one smaller than the other, so this must have more. And the problem I have with these guys, for the most part, is, as I was expressing before when I was talking with Ina, was right. There is a tier that we hit where volume could include a 120 whip.
Right.
And at that point is where I'm not paying for it. I'm not going to go for that. And we've seen that from Webb. We've seen that from Valdez. We've seen that from Ray. And I am hesitant there. I really like Nick Lodolo. I think if he had an easier schedule in September, he would be even higher on this list. He has, of course, had some injury history, and he wasn't completely void of that this year. But it was the longest runway that Nick Lodolo has ever had, and he came into form. His command was as good as I've ever seen. I'm really excited about him. I also wonder if I have him too high because it still is Cincinnati. So. This is where I just go, I don't know what to do.
Well, I have Nick Lodolo 33.
Oh, there you go. Okay, cool. But it's still very, very difficult to tell. Bubba Chandler, obviously we love Bubba Chandler. Mm-hmm. And it's, I want to avoid the Jackson Jobe problem, which was getting too hyped about a guy, but kind of overlooking some clear flaws of, sure, hey, his extension 6 foot, and hey, he doesn't get whiffs on his four seamer, are his secondaries good enough to really make that okay? But Bubba Chandler is a guy with an elite four seamer, and he dots it, and it's just that's good. At the same time, it's also the Pirates. How are they gonna view him next year? Is it going to be just every 5 days and it's fine? Or is it going to be on a leash still? Is he going to do enough with his secondaries? As he doesn't have that like 92 mile per hour slider. It's like 88, which is great. It's just not the destroyer of worlds necessarily. So I don't know what to do with Bubba Chandler, but I think he should be helping you throughout the year. And Jesus Lizardo's here. And as you can expect, the valley in the middle of the season was the valley. Everything else was amazing.
Right.
So even when we went through that of 20 runs in two starts, we were all saying, I'm still holding on to Lizardo. Let's just treat this like it never happened, which is very hard to do. But that's really what it was with Lizardo. Now, he's showcased throughout his entire career that those blowups happen every single season.
Every year. Yeah.
So it's hard to really talk about him without mentioning them. But should we really be expecting 20 runs in two games? No. And obviously there were some remnants after that too. I believe there was something to be with tipping. He's really good. He's a really good pitcher. And I think that he should be helping you more than hurting throughout the year. And that's really what I'm trying to establish as much as I can. Where do we get to the wall of, if I draft this person, I am not going to drop them at all. Mm-hmm. They're going to be benefiting my team. And then great. Then at what point, you know, how close are we to the edge of it?
Yeah.
And Lizardo, I feel like you're just going to hold the entire year.
I have Chandler a little bit higher than like Chase Burns. I feel like,
why?
I think that Chase Burns has one really good pitch. And I think the fastball also gave up a lot of contact and didn't miss as many bats as you'd like to see. I think Chandler was more successful at the MLB level than Burns. I know the underlying metrics for Burns were like, oh my God, he's so exciting. But also like he got hit around. And velocity, it's like, that's to me, that's the Jackson Jobe thing, is like velocity that doesn't miss as many bats as you'd like to see. And we know he has the secondary that can, you know, make up for that, but also pitches in a way worse park, especially if you're throwing 98 and it's being made contact with.
Yeah, go a these long are good way. Points. The counterpoint to Burns is, I mean, the Jobe thing, I hear you there. The real separation is that Chase Burns, the two things that Jobe didn't, one, and what was it, 5 straight games of 10 strikeouts?
Yeah.
Like, that's not, you know, you can, I have often have concerns about, okay, hold on a second, the four-seamer velocity isn't as good and it's not going to generate fine, but you still got 10 strikeouts in 5 games. Now, we know that there was the Pirates involved, there were some weak opponents in there, but it wasn't all that. I believe it was the Brewers. Was it just completely central of like Brewers, Cubs, and Pirates? I don't remember. But the other part of it was four-seamer slider separation. Insane. The command of Chase Burns is very unusual for a rookie. Mm-hmm. Absolutely above average, his ability to do this. And it's rare to see a guy have that kind of pitch separation and ability and lose it in the next year. This is kind of what the story of Chase Burns has been.
Yeah.
Jackson Jobe was never really that. It wasn't necessarily bad command. It just wasn't, I'm going to dot these pitches,
sure,
make the center of the zone empty and have this pitch separation. So that gives me more hope with Burns. Kyle Bland and I were talking about him last week when he was at the meetup. By the way, whoever came to the meetup, I know who you are. Thank you all so much for coming by. And Kyle made a good point too about Chase Burns, that yeah, he's likely going to be adding more pitches easier than we have seen other guys in the past as well. So I don't see this as just like Hunter Green 2.0 necessarily, just fastball slider in the struggles of Green. I see it as there's going to be more happening. However, you make a really good point that like, I don't love chasing someone who doesn't have really good swing strike rates on their four seamer.
Yeah. It's been something we talked about throughout the year. And listen, I have Burns 38 right now. So I'm not like, oh my God, how are you ranking him 31? I just have Bubba Chandler slightly higher.
Right.
I have Nick Lodolo slightly higher. Like there are guys where I'm just kind of like, I feel a little more comfortable with what I'm getting from them, but I understand the upside in Chase Burns and I'm happy to draft him, and I have him ahead of other like you know, hey, there's upside, but I'm concerned, like Jesus Luzardo type of dudes.
What's really funny is what's going to happen, Eric. There's going to be a very clear distinction in ADP.
Yeah.
I actually don't think that you're going to see Chase Burns and Bubba Chandler next to each other. And I think there's going to be some gap and the people are going to decide for us. And I will take the lower one in my drafts, right? The one, whoever's going second is the one that I'd be fine with. I think it's going to be Burns higher only because he's pitched more. He started more and there's a better understanding of that he's going to go longer in the season, that this is what he was with so many strikeouts. And it's not a feeling that he's going to be so much worse, right? I think that was what is going to lead the Chase Burns train. Well, Bubba Chandler is still a bit of a mystery box, just a little bit, not a, you know, not completely, but it just hasn't really, he hasn't really showed himself fully yet.
Yeah. I'm just looking at your tiers. I think what's interesting is like your, this tier and the next tier for me, we have a lot of guys in a similar range, but we split them up differently because I view this clump as like, there are some very clear, hey, this guy may have another level. And there's some really interesting strikeout stuff with like the Robbie Ray's, Bubba Chandler's, Jesus Luzardo's. Like I'll hint at some of the guys in the next tier. We'll get to it. But like Nolan McClain, you know, Bryce Miller, Edward Cabrera, Gavin Williams. And then there's some of like the, hey, this guy is pretty safe and, you know, consistent. And there might not be like, you know, I'm not going gaga over the swinging.
Right. Truck. I didn't know what to do. This
of
is
Logan, of Logan Webb and Sandy Alcantara and Sonny.
Oh gosh. It's the hardest part of every ranking. It's so hard, Eric.
I have them ranked as basically volatile starters with upside and consistent starters who lack the upside is basically how I just like
the problem I have with that is the grouping of them. There is a range inside of them that's very distinct.
Sure.
And I couldn't see myself, let's say you have the, whichever one you want to favor, the B tier of that, I would not be drafting over the A tier of the other one. And I didn't want to do four tiers, you know, so I just kind of made it two and combined a bit. It's just so hard. This is really from range 32 all the way to 52 for me is just such a blob. I mean, it's the glob, right? Or whatever you want to say. It's really tough, which then of course says, hey, look, just go and get a lot of them if you want.
Yeah.
Try to not go after the riskier ones if you're waiting on pitching as much, is what I'll say. But yeah, if you want, go ahead with tier number seven.
Yeah, so that's some of the ones we have crossover on tier seven. It starts number 38, Nolan McClain, number 39, Cade Horton, number 40, Trevor Rogers, number 41, Ranger Suarez, number 42, Aaron Nola. Number 43, Sandy Alcantara. Number 44, Bryce Miller. Number 45, Edward Cabrera. Number 46, Sonny Gray. And number 47, Gavin Williams. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
So this is the magazine stand, but more importantly, the double stacked magazine, because you're going to have others that are in front of this one, but you really want the one behind it. Right? It's not the same issue or whatever. It's just different magazines on here, and you really need to remove that first one so you can get the actual thing you're probably going to get behind it.
And is that because you're just going to take whoever falls in this range?
Well, it's more that I feel a lot of these are not very separate or not that different, as we're saying,
okay,
from those in the previous tier, even, you know, a little bit higher in some cases. Yet they have a very similar probability for success, right?
Sure.
So for example, you have the Cade Horton, who's a very interesting one to me.
Yeah.
As someone with a four seamer that's really a cutter that has routinely gotten outs and strikes for him. Right. And you see Cade Horton with an elite defense behind him. And I can't emphasize that enough how much pitching for the Cubs helps Cade Horton, and it's great. And I think that creates a really good floor for him. But the strikeouts haven't quite been there yet. And also his secondaries could improve. He could get better over time. This is a very safe play with more, right? That could easily eclipse some of those other guys we were talking about. There's Ranger Suarez, where he was one of the steals of this year's draft, right? Even though he took like 2 weeks to start pitching, it was insane. I mean, he went like SP 70, SP 80 something.
Speaking of,
yeah,
took a few weeks to start pitching, but then delivered is Trevor Rogers, who's in this team.
Oh, well,
too.
that was months. It was like he showed up once.
Yeah,
and then
it took a few months. He had that one spot start against the Red Sox.
And we're like, that's really cool. And then he's gone. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess. And then, right. So this is also a tier with a lot of swatches as we're on Swatch Watch 2026. And Swatch, Eric, would you like to explain what that is?
Yeah, so Swatch is, it's a southpaw with a
tight.
Is it with a what?
With a tight changeup.
Tight changeup?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, tremendous changeup? That was
tremendous
the T I didn't
works too.
But we were, Nick and I have been talking about, and we will do some content on it this offseason, but trying to kind of clarify or, you know, quantify the success of guys like Noah Cameron.
I mean, the next year is 3 out of 5.
All of them, Noah Cameron, Andrew Abbott, Matthew Boyd, Parker Messick, guys like that, lefties who have good command of their fastball and plus changeups. And so they're kind of able to get ahead on righties and then also just use that changeup as a real plus pitch for strikes, swinging strikes, all that kind of stuff.
Right. And Trevor Rogers was doing that. I mean, Trevor Rogers' four-seamer changeup, that was such a huge part of what he does. And it's not like a four-seamer that is overwhelming. It should not be as good as it is, but he gets really good pitch separation. He also has the breaking ball, which sometimes was really there, that slider, and sometimes was not. I guess it's now actually a sweeper. So it's so hard to understand. Okay, this is the thing I'm really struggling with for the season ahead, is these swatches were the steals of last year.
Right.
They were just so consistently productive for you. And you have to think the league adjusts in some way. It could be just like, oh, cool guys, this is how we're going to go after them more or differently, or just have more practice on it. It could be as something as, hey, the deadened ball is not as deadened anymore. And that is often a backbreaker for swatches. Right, you think of Matthew Boyd with his home run rates in the past, right? You've seen it with Trevor Rogers, I believe, in the past. Okay, I could be wrong about that one. Andrew Abbott has certainly had his instances with that. It could also be Great American Ballpark. What I'm trying to get at is it worked this year. I don't know how much stock to put into it for another year like this.
Sure.
So that's why I pushed down Rogers and Suarez down into this tier.
I think we understand that, like, conceptually it works. Like, it makes sense why these guys are succeeding as lefties with plus changeups and good command of their arsenals. Like, it's not like, hey, you know, this came out of nowhere. It's like, it may have come out of nowhere because who knew that Matthew Boyd was going to pitch that well or Trevor Rogers was going to pitch that well. But when you see how they're doing it, you're like, okay, that makes sense. And then it's just, do you believe they could do it again?
Doesn't make sense, Eric. I'm sorry. I'm going to push back. It doesn't.
It makes
because
sense.
It's a four-seamer that should not do well and a very good changeup. It's like it breaks the Wasker rule for lefties.
The four-seamer should,
and a fastball that isn't good enough, right?
But the four-seamer should do well because the changeup makes the four-seamer better.
Yeah,
I think it's just like,
but the slider,
the
I guess,
combination yeah. to hit,
yeah,
as a hitter is a good fastball changeup. And I want to say, like, yes, I never faced a Paul Skeens splinker or, like, you know, the ridiculous sliders these MLB guys have, but, like, if you're just talking about a pairing, a well commanded fastball and a plus changeup, it's just the hardest combination because you can throw either one in any count in almost any location and it just doesn't matter. And you can say I'm sitting on a changeup, but it might be really hard for you to see that that's a changeup coming out of the hand. If I'm sitting on a slider and I get a slider, I'm gonna pick up the spin on that slider because I'm looking for it. I'm looking for that spin. If I'm sitting on a changeup, I don't see a dot. I'm not looking for something in particular. I'm just trying to get speed, I guess. Notice speed.
Right. And you want, you know, really, you want Santana the whole thing about essentially right. making his changeup look exactly the same as a four seamer, and he would have a circle four seamer grip. And that was how it became so successful. And I get that. I really do. It's just that we've seen, it's not like this is the first year we've ever seen a southpaw with a changeup. You know, like we've seen that many, many a time and not have this kind of success.
I wonder, we could go back and look at it. We could maybe talk to Kyle about it. I wonder if it's not a changeup and a four seamer. I wonder if it's a changeup and multiple fastballs. Like, are these guys fastball sinker changeup, fastball cutter changeup? Are you giving a hitter multiple fastball looks plus adding in a good changeup, because that multiple fastball look has been an ongoing shift and has really kind of helped some guys right. this year? And so we can dig into that. I think we've spent a lot of time on the swatches. I want to talk to you about one other guy in this tier.
Yep.
Because over his last eight starts of the season.
Yeah.
Sandy Alcantara right. had a 2.68 ERA, a 0.86 whip, a 20% strikeout minus walk ratio, a 111 stuff plus, 104 location plus, if you're just looking at that kind of map. What prevents him from just kind of going back up in that Logan Webb tier of like, hey, there's not a lot of strikeout upside here, but you're probably going to have good ratios and you might get back to being 180 inning arm.
Well, he might be. But when you do it for that little across the year.
But we know why he did it for that little across the year.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So the narrative then is Sandy Alcantara was coming back from Tommy John and he didn't have feel for his things. He didn't have the command for his things. And all of a sudden he clicked it in and that's that.
Yes.
The main aspects of his arsenal that he needed back were his changeup and his four seamer slash sinker command. Really, the changeup. The changeup has to be the leading pitch for Alcantara, because he throws so hard, as you're mentioning. Doesn't matter if you're lefty or righty. Like, you're trying to gear it for 99, and then here's a 92, 93 mile per hour changeup that you cannot distinguish between. That 6 mile per hour difference is just impossible. So, without that before, it wasn't nearly as effective. However, we have seen before Sandy not have that changeup, right? It's not like this is the only time we've ever seen in the existence of Sandy Alcantara that he's devoid of his ability. And I'm not totally convinced that, oh, cool, now he is that ace forever again.
But yeah, but I'm not even saying ace. Like, even if you expand the sample size, mm-hmm. the second half of the season, it's over 83 innings, 83 and two thirds innings, 333 ERA, 104 whip, 21.3 strikeout minus walk ratio. Strikeouts are still down from like 2021, 2022, when he was like putting up, you know, really good fantasy numbers. But the whip is back to being like a really strong whip over that sample. And the ERA, a 333 ERA in this environment, is pretty good for you. Like, to me, I was never in on, hey, Sandy is an ace, but I'm now coming in on like, hey, Sandy might just be a really safe, like SP2, where if you drafted a strikeout upside guy before, and you're just getting somebody with solid ratios on, like, let's be honest, like a Marlins team that was kind of feisty in the second half of the season and might not be terrible. Like, that might be a decent team, not a playoff team, but a decent team in a pitcher's park. And a guy who still might also be traded. Like, I have Sandy right now ranked 32nd. And to me, like, that's not, hey, he's an ace, but that's like, I would be fine if I went aggressive upside early on. I'm totally fine with getting Sandy Alcantara on my roster.
Yeah. So a couple things there quickly. One, the Marlins defense hurts. Just so we're clear, if he does happen to stick around. And so I'm going to consider pitching for the Marlins a negative just in general. However, I very much expect them to be dealt. I mean, just even how the Marlins treated him, letting him go as long as he did. He pitched 100 pitches on September 26th, They were not in contention. He's coming back from Tommy John. And they go, yeah, let's just keep throwing you as much as possible. Why? To prove a point to everyone else, right? To say, look at him. Look how great he is. Because we are not going to get the repercussions of pushing him, possibly. Like, we don't, there's no risk for us because we won't really see that. And so that to me is just such a clear indication that he's not going to be on the Marlins. And also the trade deadline, they said, well, we believe that Sandy's going to be an ace in the second half and we can't, you know, and the price will go up in the winter.
Yeah. And right. That's what they're looking for.
Right.
I should also say, yeah, on the defense point.
Yes.
Moving Xavier Edwards to second base from shortstop drastically improved their defense. He is a -7 outs above average defender at shortstop and a +9 outs above average defender at second base. Right. And Otto Lopez is an above average shortstop and second baseman. And so he then moved to short and played above average defense at shortstop. And so now up the middle, you're improved because Edwards, assuming that they keep that going forward, because Edwards is just a better fit at second base. The issue is that, like, Connor Norby, Graham Pauly, it doesn't really matter. Like, there's really subpar defense at third base, and then we don't really know who their first baseman is right now.
Really good stuff there. When did that happen? Because I'm actually, by the way, it's kind of funny. I'm looking at the last eight games that he had, right? A 212 BABIP, but 34% ICR, 82% left on base rate.
It happened. So, let me try to identify it from the game log, because it happened when, because Xavier Edwards and Otto Lopez were both hurt. Mm-hmm. And then when, so it looks like it happened June 1st.
Okay. So that doesn't sway me too much then, because if it was like August 1st or something like that, I'd be more interested. It's a higher level than I was before. It's not as convincing for me, because we certainly saw him get hit around. It's not like he was allowing all these hits because of the bad defense. All of a sudden the defense changed, all of a sudden the hits go away, right? What I am getting at with Sandy Alcantara is, and it feels really weird to be so negative on him because I'm inherently not, is that I can't ignore the fact that he pitched for so long so poorly. And this is really just the mentality I'm having entering this season, as much as I can, is doing whatever I can to not bet as much on improvement and understanding what is successful and sustainable more, right? And something that I actually really should be taking to heart more often, and I'm trying to do also my rankings this year, is I would say, when I look at all the things that I can and can't do, the best skill I think that I have personally for my fantasy game, and when it comes to in season, is really the in season pickups and decisions. So if I'm drafting a team, I'm not going to be drafting in a way of I need to nail this draft and not pick up guys in season. I need to be drafting guys that are benefits, and I will get that extra boost in season, right? But I need to make sure that I draft guys that are benefits. I don't want to be drafting the 120 whip guys. I don't want to be drafting the 3.8 ERA and 8 win guys, right? I need to make sure that I'm surrounding myself with more of the just stable, productive, you're happy arms. And that risk of Alcantara not necessarily having his change of feel all of a sudden again, that is a bit of a concern that I can't overlook.
Okay, that's fair. We're going to try to not rush through, but go quickly through these other names in the top 100, but we're going to do that after this break. So we already talked about some of the guys in the next tier, but I will just list them off. It's number 48, Andrew Abbott, number 49, Noah Cameron, number 50, Matthew Boyd, number 51, Ryan Nelson, number 52, Kevin Gausman. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Oh gosh. It's, you know, it is the envelope tier. Because I kind of put this, I write it on a piece of paper and I put it in the envelope. Like, I don't want to look at this anymore. I'll open it in October. It's like, I don't know where to put Kevin Gausman.
Right.
I actually even told Josh Mockenstein, as we're finishing up the top 200 and doing the little details, it's like, hey, who would you say is like the last pitcher that is, yeah, this guy, you draft him, you don't drop him the entire year. And I put it as Kevin Gausman. Yeah. And I don't want to be Kevin Gausman. It probably really should be Matthew Boyd, come to think of it. And Ryan Nelson, to me, I want to say is that too, but it is still really just a fastball.
Yeah.
And why I have him as high as I do is because if Ryan Nelson does actually have something else that's a legitimate number two pitch that he can throw 30% of the time or 40% of the time with that four seamer, he becomes like a top 30 pitcher. Mm-hmm. That four seamer is just that successful and consistently great. So I don't know what we're going to see there. He's been experimenting massively and nothing's quite clicked yet, but he's still young and he's going to get the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. I have Gausman 44. You have him 52. Ooh. I think we're kind of in the, and that's a, like, it's a tier thing. You know, I have him in this like consistent range of guys that lack upside, and I could move him down all the way to like 61 under like the injured guys and the upside guys. And so it is, I'm still trying to figure Gausman out.
Yeah. He's always going to bother me. And that's just what it is.
Your tier number, your next tier starts number 53, Tatsuya Imai, number 54, Troy Melton, number 55, Emmett Sheehan, 56, Connolly Early, 57, Shane Boz, 58, Trey Yosevich. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
It's called the FOMO tier. I mean, really, what this is a problem I have too is there are a lot of guys that every year they go, okay, I know this can work. I know this can be really, really good. Mm-hmm. I actually tried to go back and really look at how many of the guys from this tier in particular every year, where it's like cool, where I call it like the cliff and where you're really just chasing upside, how many of those really truly click?
Right.
And it's much fewer than you think.
And I know that because I made the poor decision of drafting far too many guys in that tier this year, thinking, hey, at least like two or three of these guys will click. Well, and some of them didn't. One of them was Gavin Williams, who decided to click in the second half of the season.
This is one of the problems that a lot of people have with we need to be good at in the offseason is recognizing the season numbers are not your life as a manager.
Yeah.
So my point here is it's not actually that bad if they don't click because you're drafting them with the understanding that I'm okay dropping them. It's something that I emphasize every single year. You're going to hear me again say it. Constantly.
If you don't go crazy on those guys. That was my issue was I drafted some starting pitchers early and then I waited and I was like, I'm going to load up on these guys at the end and a few of them will click. And they were like my SP 4, 5, 6. And I had some teams where none of them clicked and you're like, okay, I have three reliable starters. And then if one of those guys is like Michael King and gets hurt, you're like, cool. My team has two reliable starters. Right, and then your whole season is a headache.
So this is why I always say, hey, I want four of the guys that are like, I'm not dropping you throughout the year. I have confidence in you getting 150, 160 innings, you know, just kind of going throughout the year, hopefully 180, but you understand my point. That then opens the door to go for these, because if you have the mentality that I am not expecting this to work, that means you can pivot quickly. And I actually reached out to the Pitcherless staff today to for an article request. I sometimes do this where I say, I want to read this article. And I know that someone on staff can do this really well, which is what months of the season return the most value for pickups? And you would think it's got to be April and it would make the most sense for April. I want to kind of phrase it in the way of when you are picking up pitchers, starting pitchers, who are the ones that are like the hot transaction trends, right? And what is the percentage of them that are held for 2 months? And I am actually starting to grasp the fact of May and June have many as well as April. So what I'm trying to get at is it doesn't have to be someone that you drop necessarily the first week or two of April. Right. It can be someone that you can give them a decent shot and it's okay. You are still going to find things in May and June. And I mean, look, Trevor Rogers is a perfect example. Or if you, everyone had the chance, I'm sorry, 85% to 90% of leagues had the chance to add Eury Pérez and Kyle Bradish and Shane Bieber. as well, right? Oh yeah, we saw Robbie Ray. That is a good, another good example from the previous year who then carried over and had success this year, right? Okay. So this is the tier like Troy Melton. Oh my gosh, he looks so good. Except that there's not, with Troy Melton, there's nothing that is just, that is overwhelmingly elite. Everything is just well above average.
Yeah.
And that always bothers me a little because there isn't this leader pitch to save you. And we've seen this kind of in the past. I mean, Jackson Jobe is kind of like that. It looks good. Like Zebby Matthews is like that too a bit. And you can get kind of caught up in that as opposed to that works in like 3-4 years when they're a more complete pitcher. They know how to command right. it and wield it. But when you're younger, it doesn't always work. Emmett Sheehan, I actually love. I think Emmett Sheehan's already kind of finished, like he's got it for the most part, but he doesn't have the routine. And yeah. if he goes the Pepio route, I'll be so happy. I think Connelly Early is actually that guy of having the complete arsenal more so and ready and doing that now, which is cool. And also has like dominating fastballs, which is amazing. Is he going to start? I hope he starts. And I don't know. It's still really fresh. Like he absolutely could just stumble out of the gate and that's that. Treyas Savage, I'm going to tell you right now. It's very, guys are having trouble really picking up his extremely high arm angle with the splitter and the four seamer. So he's not the first person ever to do that. And I think it's a little bit unique now, but inherently the four seamer is not actually that great of a pitch. It's because of the splitter.
Yes.
So you're going to see some starts where the splitter isn't there and it's going to be a little bit more of a problem for you, Savage. I also think that the book will get out a bit. That is, guys will get more training against it and he'll get worse. The benefit that Treyas Savage has is that there's a slider and that's a much better slider than like your typical two strike pitchers. So that gives me a little bit more safety and confidence that you can be okay with that. And of course there's Shane Baz. He's going to Trop. He's going to be in Trop. Okay. And Shane Baz was like the perfect example of a pitcher that this should be good. Right. And he just kept getting demolished. And it's just like he does not deserve to get demolished.
And there were stretches where it was good. There just weren't long stretches, but there were stretches where it was good. Like not great, but there were stretches where it was good.
Right. So I think that you take Shane Baz in this horrific park where Ryan Pepio said, like, you don't know what your pitches are doing, and you put them into the pitching lab, which is exactly what you want. Pitches do exactly what you expect them to do. I like Shane Baz now.
Yeah.
So I was even tempted to push up Shane Baz into like 43 or something like that, just because I see someone that the Rays are going to let loose for the entire year. And the Rays generally are winning ball clubs and it's going to be a nice home park as well. And it just seems safer than the other ones, despite the fact that Shane Baz frustrated so many managers on this past year. So it's a very interesting tier. And I could have thrown maybe one or two other guys that we all like to put in here, but these are the ones I think are those are the targets for me. The ones I actually think have the clearest path to being successful.
Yeah, I like that. And we'll talk more about Tetsuya Imai when he gets posted, if he gets posted and all that in the offseason. This next tier is pretty self-explanatory. They're all guys who are injured, but you like. And so it starts with number 59, Pablo Lopez. Number 60, Brandon Woodruff. 61, Spencer Schwellenbach. 62, Shane McClanahan. 63, Nathan Eovaldi. 64, Grayson Rodriguez. 65, Joe Musgrove. 66, Carlos Rodon. 67, Garrett Cole. 68, Chris Bubich. 69, Reese Olson. I'll just answer this for you. The rankings of these guys are going to change drastically by February or March when we get more information. This is just a way of saying like, hey, these guys are hurt, but they're good and we should keep an eye on them because you want them if they're healthy.
Yeah. And as I already see, I already moved Woodruff, by the way. Thank you for that, Eric. And I want to mention too, that these are ones that are going to be, that could be there right away for the most part, or like a month or two after. Garrett Cole is up here as well. A little bit, okay, fine, June or so. Carlos Rodon, about a month or so. I felt like I should put Garrett Cole above the other Tommy John guys because it's Garrett Cole, even though I still have some skepticism about like how effective he'll be, kind of like how Strider was, but then Strider was rushed a little bit. That's the whole story. But everyone else here theoretically could be pitching right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Every single one, believe it or not. So like Musgrove and Grayson Rodriguez. Grayson Rodriguez was bone spur stuff, apparently. Yeah. Shane McClanahan is expected. So, yeah, good luck.
These last three tiers that wrap up the top 100, I'll just say to people, like, we are, I would like, I think we will in the coming weeks do a little bit more on like some of the guys going late who could be good values. And so we'll get to these guys a little bit more. This is already over an hour. We've gone a little longer than
we thought. We should absolutely do that, Eric. And we'll do another podcast specifically on these tiers, because this is where you can get very muddy.
Right.
And if we are able to highlight what could change by February, so what are the things?
What's to kind of look at?
Make a good decision for yourselves.
But I'll just read them off now, at least. Yeah. So this first tier of Toby upsides, it's 70 Tanner Bibee, 71 Will Warren, 72 Luis Castillo, 73 Seth Lugo, 74 Merrill Kelly, 75 Zach Gallen, 76 Joey Cantillo, 77 Kodai Senga. Anything quick you want to say before we just acknowledge we're going to talk about these guys more later?
Just don't ignore Lugo and Kelly, y'all.
Yeah.
They're good.
I have Kelly higher than this.
I just got him in like the 19th round of our draft, 20th round, whatever it is. It's fine.
Yeah. All right. And he was good. And it'll depend. He's a free agent. So I guess it'll depend where he goes.
Yep.
78, Sarah Gibson Long, 79, Mackenzie Gores, 80, Jack Flaherty, 81, Spencer Strider, 82, Ryan Weathers, 83, Peyton Toll, 84, or Tolley, 84, Mick Abel, 85, Jack Leiter, 86, Ebby Matthews, 87, Jonah Tong, 88, Andrew Painter. Obviously, the big one here we will talk about is Spencer Strider. People are going to be saying, how do you have Spencer Strider down at 81?
Because there's not been a single example of a pitcher coming back from Tommy John having lower velocity and a worse vert on a four seamer, and then the next year getting it back.
Yes,
it's never happened.
I'm higher than you on Spencer Strider, and I have him 70. So I don't. Neither one of us is like, hey, we're getting a bounce back. But again,
this is the trap tier. This is what it is. This is really like this is a trap. I mean, Sawyer Gibson Long kind of shouldn't be there, and I might just stick him into the one above because I don't consider him necessarily a trap. It's a very easy one to get out of. If you have him,
also you could just cheat and do what I did because he did end the year hurt, and I just put him in an injury tier, and I was like, "We'll just cross this bridge."
Oh, I might do that. That sounds great. Yeah. But I think like Jonah Tong and Zebby Matthews and Jack Leiter, those are trap plays because you're not going to get clarity.
Yeah. I'll just tell you, even though some of these go over the tier, rounding out the top 100. Is 89 Zach Eflin, 90 Lucas Giolito, 91 Brian Bayo, 92 Casey Mize, 93 Shane Smith, 94 Quinn Priester, 95 Cade Povich, 96 Parker Messick, 97 Ian Seymour, 98 Joey Wentz, 99 Christian Javier, and 100 Landon Rupp.
Yeah, so most of those are in the Toby upside three tier, which is essentially recognizing that upside can be in the form of good productive volume. Right. And all of those have a chance to have an sub 120 whip, sub 3.6 ERA, and at least a 20% strikeout rate and get you wins. All of those have that there. So I want to recognize that and say, like, look, that is a possibility. And it's sometimes better for you to chase, you know, you can chase that and not just the strikeout excitement because it's not just only strikeouts are the only path to upside.
Yep. We're going to talk about a lot of things in the off season. I think one thing that we can chat about is, some interesting questions that are being asked in the comments right now. I think it's worth discussing later. Just the impact of the ABS challenge system on certain types of pitchers. I will just say, I think it is going to be drastically over focused on
it's gonna be negligible
in the off season. Because you're talking about two challenges per game. Obviously, if you retain them, you get more. But this is not like robot umpires, quote unquote, where guys who nibble are going to be really hurt because they're not going to be challenging these calls all game long. And I think it is a little bit of a false equivalency to compare how guys did in AAA with the challenge system to how guys do in the big leagues with the challenge system, because pitchers just pitch AAA hitters very differently than they pitch big league hitters. And big league hitters are going to approach differently than AAA hitters. So I would just totally ignore, hey, this guy did better in the ABS system than he did in the big leagues or vice versa. I just think it's a total false equivalency with a lot of details that don't mesh. But that is something that we'll discuss in the off season. As we just talked about on the next podcast, we'll get into more of those late round guys in a little more detail, guys that we think, you know, those guys that could really make or break your draft at this point of like, who are we excited about drafting and not.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's it. That's going to do it for today. Everybody go get ready to watch ALCS game seven. Wait. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go sit in front of my TV and get ready for this game in, what, 3 hours? It's going to be exciting.